This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We will welcome in two guests from different perspectives to discuss the top national and state political stories of the week. And we will welcome your input, too. What issue do you want us to talk about? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let me welcome our guests. Happy to have with us today Lon Newman, a retired executive director of Family Planning Health Services in Wausau, former chair of the Portage County Democratic Party. Good morning, Lon Newman.
Good morning.
And with us also is Dan Kopanky, a former Republican state senator from La Crosse and owner of the La Crosse Loggers baseball team. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning, Joy, and happy Thanksgiving weekend to everyone out there.
Yes, happy Thanksgiving. You know, I wanted, it was a happy Thanksgiving, but the poor Packers lost to the Chicago Bears last night. But Brett Favre's number four jersey was retired, and it was a very touching ceremony with the former Packer great Bart Starr there as well. So, Dan Kopanky, your thoughts on this this morning after?
Yeah, very tough loss, tough ending to the night, but a very good day there at Lambeau nonetheless with Bart Starr and Aaron Rodgers and Brett Favre being together. There'll be three Hall of Famers, and it's pretty special.
Yeah. Lon, were you watching that?
No, I'm the worst person to talk about pro sports in the world. Anyway, I did read about Brett Favre's comments, and it did seem like he really inspired the whole crowd, and what a nice, gracious speech he gave.
Yeah. Did you have a nice Thanksgiving, Lon?
I did. We had a wonderful turkey dinner, and we ate out, and so Janet didn't have to cook, but it was good.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking of Thanksgiving in part because of the Thanksgiving Day Parade. There was a huge police presence and a lot of, maybe that's the way it always is, but maybe people were a little bit more on edge following the Paris terrorist attacks. Any thoughts, Dan Kopanky, on how safe we are here at home following those attacks?
Oh, I think our security alarms have been heightened for sure, and I think our law enforcement people are doing everything they can with the knowledge they have at this time. I mean, some people think back to what happened in Paris, and it could have been avoided if they had the information, but I don't think they had the information, of course, otherwise they would have thwarted that. So I think our people are doing as well as they can. I know our people in New York who are seasoned, unfortunately, in some terrorist attacks, certainly are in high alert and doing the best they can.
Yeah. Lon Newman, some thoughts on the terrorist threat today?
Well, I mean, I spent a lot of time on this and reading about it and thinking about it. And to oversimplify, I mean, I got sort of three threads that I would say need to be dealt with. And we're kind of dealing with one, but not the other two very well. First one is, you know, there's a theological source, a hatred and fear source of some of these conflicts. And, of course, that's the soil from which terrorism grows and ferments, and, you know, to mix metaphors. And then secondly, I think, you know, we have to deal with the humanitarian, the refugee crises, because, again, you know, Chechnya and other places where the refugee crisis, which is overwhelming, have not been dealt with, provide, again, a recruiting ground for generations. And then thirdly, I think the more political and the more commonly talked about solutions. I really was encouraged by David Brooks talking about Secretary Clinton's speech to the Council on Foreign Relations, and there's quite a bit in there, but Mr. Brooks basically said Hillary really did a thoughtful and thorough analysis of steps we could take, both on the military and the diplomatic and the foreign relations front, to start to address these issues. I think without those three things being dealt with, some long-term, some short-term and immediate, I think, you know, we fail to, I'm going to say, win this war on terrorism or radical Islam or however you want to express that conflict.
Well, President Obama and French President Hollande have vowed to work closely together to stamp out the Islamic State. They say they want to intensify the U.S.-led military campaign. Dan Kopanky, what do you think is the answer to fighting ISIS?
Well, I think the United States has to be a leader. Unfortunately, seems like in the last few years we have not, and there has been a void in the Middle East because we have not had the presence there that we previously had. And as a result of this, Putin has stepped up, and he is seemingly, to many people, the world leader at this point, and that's very, very unfortunate. He's formed an alliance, of course, with Syria and Iran to some extent, and they seem to be the force over there in the Middle East. And I think what we need to do with France is get other European countries, for one, involved. Great Britain is not at this point. I think they're going to have a vote and maybe get involved with some of the air raids and bombing. But we need a coalition, and we have to have a leader. And NATO needs to be involved. We need to have troops on the ground eventually. It doesn't have to be all U.S. troops, but we have to have troops from the area, troops from Europe, troops from the United States. Together with the bombing, I think that's what needs to happen to address this. These terrible, terrible people who are bent on destroying our way of life and killing so many innocent people.
Mm-hmm. Lon?
Well, again, I think I was trying to talk about three dimensions, and I think Putin is the best example of the worst activities in one of those dimensions. And in that sense, Putin is bombastic, is militaristic, he is playing to nationalistic politics, and we see now in the last, with the episode with Turkey, you see the consequence of this kind of unidimensional, testosterone overblown reaction to what is a very complex international and local situation. I mean, Turkey, just to sort through, I mean, I'm not able to do it. I don't want to say the wrong thing here, but just to sort through the Turkish political situation relative to the Syrian conflict is very, very complex and difficult. And Putin sending in, you know, Russian warplanes to, you know, tromp around and make a mess might play well in the Soviet Union, in Russia, but it certainly is not, as we can see, really addressing the problem of how do we get reconciliation and move forward on the Syrian conflict. And that's one of the things that, you know, Secretary Clinton's piece and pretty much everybody agrees on, I think, probably Senator Kopanky agrees as well. We have to solve the Syrian civil war before we can chew gum and walk at the same time, but we need to solve the Syrian conflict in order to, on a long-term basis, resolve these refugee problems, the immigration problems, the war on the so-called state of ISIS.
Governor Walker on Wednesday defended his plan to not welcome Syrian refugees into Wisconsin, saying that the Obama administration's handling of the Paris terrorist attack shows it can't be trusted to ensure that the refugees are not a threat on U.S. soil. He said that the president himself said ISIS was contained, and hours later there was an attack on Paris. How did they not know that? So Scott Walker blaming the Obama administration, the intel failing to predict the Paris attacks. Getting to the refugees later, Dan Kopanky, did our intelligence fail us?
Well, I think the civilized community of the world must collectively accept responsibility, because it happened. It happened to a civil society and by these Islamic terrorists, and we have to attack them as they are attacking us, and that is the first priority. Whether we have issues in Syria, in the Middle East, and whatever, the first priority right now is to get rid of these Islamic terrorists, and we need to do this together, collectively, and then only then can we look at the other problems, whether it be Syria, the refugees, or whatever. But as long as these terrorists are out there doing what they're doing, we've had, you know, Mali, France, Tunisia recently, Turkey shoots down at Russian jet. We have disarray in the world community right now. And again, I said it earlier, but we have a leadership void coming from the United States that needs to be addressed. And we need to take the leadership here. People are looking to the United States as they have in the past. And up until now, we haven't been there.
Lon?
Well, I mean, I do want to, there's several things that Dan said, and one of which I would base fundamental argument on agree with, which is the collaboration, collective action, cooperation, and the need to work together with the other countries who largely are united against the, ISIS and these terrorist acts and Al-Qaeda and all that. What I would disagree with, again, it's sort of, I don't think we have time, or we don't have the luxury of being single-minded and simplistic about what the set of problems are. So this idea, I mean, similar to immigration policy, we can't do anything until we build a wall, or we can't do anything until we militarily crush the ISIS pseudo-state. You know, that's just not rational. We need to be working on those things, certainly, but to say we're going to do that exclusively or we can't do anything else until we do that is just, I think, not clear thinking. On Obama's side of this, I think what he's trying to do, and it's not very successful, I would agree on that, what he's trying to do is not give in to the panic and fear, and he's trying to calm, both as a world leader and as a American leader, is trying to calm the public. I think that's really good. No panic, you know, and that comes across in the minds of, again, many who are, you know, over machismo fuel, to take this, you know, appear to be strong, to look strong rather than to be strong. But interesting, I think one really important point about where these attacks in France arose from and how, where maybe there's potential solution to the problem. I think it's Belgium that they arose out of. And examining the situation in Belgium, you find a bureaucracy upon bureaucracy upon bureaucracy, which is tangled upon with one another. We have almost a failed sort of intelligence and security situation there, where local law enforcement does not seem to be able to monitor, investigate, adequately protect, you know, the French and neighboring countries from the activities of these radical groups. And you also see with, I think, you know, I would say the failure of the immigration refugee situation is not that the refugees are the terrorists so much as the whole system, and the U.S. as well, is underfunded, under muscular in this way, and not efficient and effective. And people are moving across these borders with little or no oversight, settling in communities where there is inadequate oversight and even inadequate support for contrary philosophical, theological views within these impoverished and segregated European communities.
Lon, I need to jump in because we have to take a short break, and then when we come back, we'll take more of your calls on, we'll talk more about the Syrian refugee issue and other top issues in the news. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. This is the Week in Review, talking with Lon Newman, who is a former chair of the Portage County Democratic Party, and Dan Kopanky, a former Republican state senator from La Crosse. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with two guests from different perspectives about the top stories in the news this week. This week's Week in Review guests are Dan Kopanky, a former Republican state senator from La Crosse, and Lon Newman, who is a former chair of the Portage County Democratic Party. Our number, if you'd like to join in with an issue from the news this week that you would like us to discuss, or a comment on what we are discussing, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. To the phones we go, and Dave in Madison is with us. Hi, Dave.
Yes, hello. I think that when Scott Walker said that the Syrian refugees couldn't come into Madison, we suffered a failure of nerve, and that was what the terrorists wanted. So they won when Scott Walker said we couldn't accept Syrian refugees.
Dan Kopanky, did the terrorists win because Scott Walker said we will not take in Syrian refugees?
No, I don't think so. I think what makes a lot of sense is the legislation recently passed in the House, led by Speaker Paul Ryan, whereby the several agencies in the United States government would be able to affirm that these people are who they are. And I think that makes a lot of sense. I hope it gets through the Senate, and I hope the president has enough wisdom to sign that bill, because that allows the refugees to come in, but also assures the American people of some security in allowing them in. You know, that the number one issue is the residents of a particular state or the citizens of a country, and that is security, and that is the responsibility of our elected officials, and that's what they should do, and I think this legislation addresses that very well.
Yeah, I'll get Lon to respond to that in a moment, but President Obama this week is appealing anew for acceptance of Syrian refugees, saying so much of our greatness comes from our generosity. In his weekly radio address this week, Obama noted his commitment to accept an additional 10,000 Syrian refugees this year. He said no refugees can come here until they undergo the highest security checks of anyone traveling to the United States. Bringing it back, Dan Kopanky, aren't the Syrian refugees vetted enough?
I don't think so. When you listen to some of the people within the Obama's administration even talk about they can't be sure because there's so little data coming out of Syria, they can't be sure. So I think that, no, I don't think we can be. And I think that, again, this legislation makes a lot of sense. And some of the candidates have also talked about a no-fly zone in Syria where NATO would protect these people, where they could stay in their homeland. We're bringing them a continent away from where they were born and raised, and I'm not sure that's the best thing for them either. So if we could somehow, as some candidates have suggested, a no-fly zone, an area right in their home country where they would be safe, to me, makes the most sense.
Lon, is there anything wrong with that legislation that passed the House?
Well, the problem is, you know, it's again, it kind of panders to the lowest common denominator and doesn't really, in fact, address the problem. Let's just talk about scale a little bit. Over 5,000 people a day are arriving on the shores of Greece. They might be able to process a few hundred, but 5,000 a day. So think about that. In Germany, 181,000 refugees arrived in October, almost 800,000 this year. So to agree with Senator Kopanky on the idea of, well, these people need to be screened, they need to be thoroughly understood, you know, the data needs to be collected, and we need to. But there's no proposal in this legislation to actually do that or to fund any kind of activity which might, one, help make a more robust screening and security process so these people can be screened and relocated or returned, if that's what's going to be called upon. There's not not a particular way to deal with. So there's camps being built to house the refugees while they're temporarily detained for the screening. They are rapidly being overwhelmed. There's no, doesn't seem to be a proposal in this legislation to provide housing and food and sustenance and medical care to these people. So again, I think Secretary Clinton called for the no-fly zone, and I think even Bernie Sanders is supporting a no-fly zone and stricter protection efforts, as well as military intervention in the Syrian conflict. But that doesn't address the refugee crisis or the immigration crisis. That's the failure of the Walker statement. It simply appeals to the again, the anti-immigrant fervor on a fringe group of the American public.
Let's go to Sheree in Waupun next. Hello, Sheree.
Hi, good morning. You know, the talk on the Syrian refugee crisis, it's almost frustrating for me to listen to, because it seems like when the attacks happened in France, all of a sudden, because that passport was found that was obviously now, you know, a fake passport, it seemed like it was an excuse to bar Syrian refugees from coming into the United States. And I hear, you know, a lot of people say, oh, we should send the men back to fight. But I don't think they understand that they're truly running from violence. They're not there because they want to leave their homes. A lot of these people are educated, and they don't want to join ISIS. But if we are forcing them to go back, you know, you're either going to go with the people who kill you or you're not. I mean, I don't want to build the ISIS army. And I feel like that's what we're doing by trying to force people to stay in a state where they're not safe. It seems like the media blew this up to make it seem like it was about the refugees, when those attacks had nothing to do with any Syrian refugee. I don't believe there's any case of any refugee coming into the United States and having a domestic terror attack. So it seems to me like we're almost freaking out over nothing.
Thank you, Sheree. You know, Dan Kopanky, that's the original reports were that one of the Paris attackers was supposedly had snuck in with Syrian refugees into the country, but that is not the case. What do you say to Sheree thinking this was overblown to try to stop Syrian refugees from coming into the country?
I don't think so. And there are so many open borders in Europe, and that's where a lot of the problem lies. You mentioned Belgium. I really don't believe that, and also she mentioned something about, you know, having them safe in their homeland. Well, I said together with Senator Secretary of State Clinton that let's have that no-fly zone. Let's have NATO involved. Let's have the countries involved in protecting these people, because they need it. They need our help, and that's the best way, in many people's opinions, that we can do that. And the other thing is, talking about Governor Walker and others who have asked for this pause and asked for that they be thoroughly vetted. I mean, the will of the people, they're asking for this. This is a very high priority for the people of the United States, and the people have to respond. Our elected people have to respond to that, the wishes of the people, and they are, and I think they're doing it in a responsible manner. Bottom line is, we do need to protect our people. We also need to help these refugees, and I think the best way to do it is right there in our own country. Mm-hmm. And I mentioned earlier about a priority, not the only thing, Lon, that we should do, but the priority should be to get rid of ISIS, and then this refugee problem and everything else can be addressed and handled in a very, very appropriate manner.
Mm-hmm. Lon Nguyen?
Well, I think Sheree is right exactly on point, and there was a recent, I'm going to say a survey, I wouldn't call it research, but survey of the actors in these terrorist actions, and as I remember, now, I mean, I'm getting older, I'm retired, so, 53% of the actors were on legal temporary visas, student visas, visas from countries where, places where a visa is not required for 90 days. I mean, things like that. And then the balance of the actors were, in fact, naturalized citizens, and as I think Sheree was saying very well, the refugees are not the terrorists. And the source of the terrorism, and this points back to my sort of three dimensions, are more, you know, the segregated, isolated, impoverished, radical religious communities in some of these, I'm going to say, states, city states, however you want to describe these things, where, you know, they're not really even being monitored for anti-government plots or anti-human plots. And on, you know, Senator Kopanky's point about, you know, the public is crying for this, I think, you know, Sidney Harris, as I remember, had a really good quote, which was, you know, you can't give the public what it wants because it doesn't know what it wants. I mean, as leaders, you want to try to persuade, convince. I mean, that's what we're doing now. Inform, persuade, convince, give people other points of view so that perhaps they can form a more fully informed opinion and perhaps change their minds about things. So, of course, after these Paris attacks, and to support President Obama's rather mild-mannered public response, telling people to go about their Thanksgiving and holiday shopping, you know, we want to approach this in a reasoned and thoughtful way and not encourage. I mean, remember the Ebola scare where we were all dying within days from these Ebola patients who were coming over? Okay, that didn't happen. I mean, the Ebola patients came, they were treated, and in some cases, because they came to America, they were cured. Similarly, the refugees, if they can be treated humanely and processed properly and securely, relocated to various countries who are willing to help, including our own, we probably have a reduction in the number of radical hotspots, I'll say it that way.
This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine, talking today with Lon Newman and Dan Kopanky about the top stories in the news this week. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org if you would like to bring up a topic for us to discuss. Let's talk about the politics of ISIS and Syria. A poll released on Monday found that Americans trust Hillary Clinton to handle the threat of terrorism more than any of the leading Republican candidates for president in the wake of the Paris attacks. The closest gap was with former Florida Governor Jeb Bush. The two match up 46% to 43%. The poll did not ask about Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders. Lon Newman, which candidate do you think is best at handling international terrorism?
Well, I think, you know, the public is strongly gravitating in the face of a crisis. This is encouraging. I'm not always encouraged by, you know, we just talked about the public's sort of knee-jerk reaction or emotional reaction sometimes to a crisis. In this case, you see the other side of the public or the other dimension of public response, which seems to be gravitating toward, look, we need somebody who is knowledgeable, informed, and I would add, you know, has the relationships with other foreign leaders to be able to understand them, negotiate with them, and, you know, as I mean, I think Senator Kopanky and I have agreed on, we need a collaborative, cooperative, thorough response. And, of course, that requires, I mean, I've had enough experience in bureaucracy. I used to work in the state Senate. God knows nobody ever elected me, Senator Kopanky, but I worked there for a year or so. And you see that policy has to be implemented, and to be implemented, it has to be understood, and the bureaucracy has to be guided and accountable and all those things. And I think the public sees that former Secretary Clinton has a more in-depth a proposal, a policy set, as well as those relationships and experience. And that's one of the reasons a lot of people, I think, are a little bit dissatisfied with President Obama, because he did have a learning curve, which I think they see in this case the secretary would not have.
Yeah, so who do you think could best handle these issues of international terrorism, Dan Kopanky?
Well, I think Lon makes a lot of sense. You know, as ISIS becomes more and more a threat, I think the voters will gravitate towards those candidates who appear to be strong and with their message and also have experience. And I think that's why, I'm not sure what poll this was, but that's why Clinton would look good in this poll. Although, if you look at Ted Cruz and Rubio, and to another extent, maybe Trump, who's been strong, at least exuded leadership and has in his campaign, I think those are the type of people that the voters will gravitate to. So strong leadership, which I've said many times already this morning, but that's what people are looking for. And whoever, again, shows that they're a very strong leader and will be a strong world leader, I think we'll get the votes.
Yeah, it was a Washington Post ABC News poll. It asked Americans if they would trust Clinton or one of five Republican candidates more on terrorism mm-hmm. issues. She led Trump 50-42%, Carson 49-40%, Cruz she led 47-40, and she led Rubio 47-43. But Ben Carson's also in the news because he has been questioned on his foreign policy cred, and his advisors said he was having some trouble learning foreign policy, has said that he does have the capacity to do so and that he will, and that he also Carson said on Sunday that his support for monitoring groups practicing things that were anti-American. In any case, is Carson someone you would support on foreign policy, Dan Kopanky?
Well, Dr. Carson is a very, very intelligent man. Obviously, he doesn't have the foreign policy experience that some of the others does, but I think that he can't catch up. There's no question about that. But the polls now reflect, again, what Lon was saying earlier, and I repeated, and that is that as ISIS becomes more and more of a threat, people are looking to candidates who have some experience and are really leaders as far as their campaign is concerned in this area of terrorism. And that's where, at this point, maybe Dr. Carson falls a little bit short, and it's reflected in the latest Iowa poll that he's lost some points down there and nationally as well. But I have confidence in that man because of what he's done and his intelligence that certainly he will surround himself with people that have experience, and as many presidents have in the past as well. So I'm not worried about Dr. Carson. I think we have some a very, very strong field of candidates on our side, and whichever one emerges will be a strong leader and hopefully elected.
Yeah. Quick react to that, Lon Newman, as we're past break time.
Yeah, Dr. Carson himself says he can learn, which I think is kind of expresses that he doesn't know now he can learn. And yeah, my concern about Dr. Carson is that he's made so many kind of outrageous statements that show that maybe he learns through a prism that distorts reality. So that's all.
Lon Newman is a retired executive director of Family Planning Health Services in Wausau and a former chair of the Portage County Democratic Party. He lives in Price County. And Dan Kopanky is a former Republican state senator from La Crosse and owner of the La Crosse Loggers baseball team. They are our two guests for this edition of The Week in Review. We'll move on to some other issues after this break, including the Black Lives Matter protests that happened this week. And we will welcome any issues that you would like to discuss. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is The Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with two guests from different perspectives about the top news stories of the week. And we are welcoming your input. Is there an issue out there that you would like to discuss? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We are talking with Dan Kopanky and Lon Newman today. Let's talk a little bit about some Black Lives Matters protests that took place this week. Maybe Maybe the most troubling is what happened in Chicago this week. A video showed a white police officer shooting a black teen from a case from some time ago. But very peaceful protests occurred after that. There were, though, five people shot near Minneapolis during a Black Lives Matter protest. I'm just wondering, Lon Newman, you first, if you have any thoughts on either of these protests.
Well, it looks to me like the Black Lives Matter people in Minneapolis have really conducted themselves on a really stellar level in terms of not, reacting. I mean, these are peaceful. They had a Thanksgiving sort of get-together to build community support. They have not, there hasn't been, rioting, looting, or other kinds of things which would be really, I mean, I don't want to say understandable, but it would certainly be kind of almost predictable when, the protesters themselves are being shot. I did a little bit of reading on this morning, and it looked to me like three people arrested, then one person released, and two people have been arrested for these shootings, and they are white citizens. But I didn't get any more information about what their motivations were, so I'm a little bit stuck to just say, well, I don't know how the investigation or the prosecution or charges are really going forward. But I would say, to the credit of the protesters, from what I read about four or five articles this morning, they seem to have conducted themselves in a peaceful manner to bring their movement forward and maintain its credibility, because, of course, that's the risk. If you overreact and degrade your protests into violent behavior, then your cause is lost.
Mm-hmm. Dan Kopanky?
Well, certainly these Chicago and Minneapolis were sparked by very tragic situations, and I have a pretty pat answer on this, and that is let the Justice Department handle this. Let them run their due course, and then we will get to the facts before we make some wild assumptions as to what happened and why and so on. So that's where I stand on this. But it's any time a life is lost, and it really doesn't matter what color it is, for sure. It's tragic, and it's too bad.
Yeah. A federal appeals court says that a Wisconsin law requiring abortion providers to get hospital admitting privileges is unconstitutional. A 3-judge panel of the 7th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals issued the decision on Monday, upholding a federal judge in Madison who struck down the law in March. Well, Lon Newman, the retired executive director of the Family Planning Health Services in Wausau, I assume you have a reaction to this story.
I do. I think the judges called this correctly, and I guess there's a contrary opinion in another federal court, so I think this is going to go to the Supreme Court. I mean, that's my quick sort of analysis on it. It's a clear effort to close the facilities, and the judges, or at least one judge himself, said there's no medical rationale for these unnecessary standards. One story I have, I hope I can be brief. I once testified at a hearing on this sort of thing, and I pointed out to one of the state representatives that, here's a constitutionally protected right that the supporters of this right feel very strongly about, similar to the right to gun ownership. If the legislature tried to pass laws restricting gun ownership in the same way that they restrict laws suppressing the right to abortion, which is also a constitutionally protected civil right, I mean, there would be like a revolution. So, I mean, and the Senate, the assembly person said he just didn't see what parallel I was talking about.
Dan Kopanky, your thoughts on whether this law is constitutional or not?
Well, I just want to say that I'm very pro-life. I think all lives matter, even those of the unborn. And relative to this ruling, I believe that there's a Texas piece of legislation that is similar, and I thought I read someplace where that piece of legislation is before the Supreme Court, and Lon's right there, that's where this will probably end up. It just seems common sense to me, and maybe Lon can help me on this, but and the listeners, that that an abortion doctor would have some kind of a relationship with a hospital. I mean, why would a hospital let anybody come in and perform an operation within their halls and walls? I just don't understand why, if this is a situation where a doctor can somehow get a relationship with a hospital where they could be allowed to be admitted and come in, I just don't see what the problem is there.
Now, what's the problem there, Lon?
Well, there isn't any prohibition from, if there are abortion complications, which are really relatively rare, thankfully, because women have access to safe and legal abortion, and they don't have problems as patients being admitted. The trick here is, well, we want the physician to have admitting privileges at the hospital. It's kind of a technical thing, but the patient must be admitted, and no, there doesn't seem to be any real problem here to be solved. But I lost my train of thought. Sorry.
Well, so pro-life people like Dan Kopanky say they just don't understand why this is such a big burden to require that a doctor who performs abortions have admitting privileges at a nearby hospital.
Right. If I remember now, I've been retired a couple of years, but if I remember when we were looking at this, you know, a couple of years ago, I think about 50% of the hospitals and clinics and affiliates in Wisconsin are Catholic, or they have a, you know, a lot of times, this is kind of heavily researched, I want to get too tedious about it, but a lot of times, for example, we ran into this in Antigo, where we're contracting, I mean, we didn't provide abortion services, we only provided contraceptive preventive care, but at the same time, we, as a family planning entity, were, you know, had to sublease facilities for vasectomies to local physicians, because not their employing clinics were Catholic, but the employing clinics had signed a contract with a previous owner of the facility, which was a Catholic provider, and prohibiting them from performing, you know, contraceptive measures. So, you know, it gets very difficult. For example, if a hospital in a local area, and there's a distance requirement in here, is a Catholic institution, I mean, I guess this abortion clinic could sit down and negotiate with the bishop, but probably, Senator, you know how that negotiation is going to go.
Do you have anything further, Dan Kopanky, on that? But you know, people say that this is just a ploy to because many hospitals won't allow a doctor who performs abortions admitting privileges.
Well, if it's 50%, I think that would be a high number, but there certainly are a lot of hospitals that would, if the abortion doctor would apply for that admitting privilege.
Well, there are hospitals, Senator, but they're not necessarily within the distance prescribed by the legislation. So that then locks the clinic in that area out.
Yeah, it is, and both of you are correct. There is a Texas case that will, as I understand it, be heard by the U.S. Supreme Court on this admitting privileges issue. So more on this another day. I would like to get a quick reactions from both of you. A new law, or a new bill, that is in the state legislature. We will be talking more about it on Monday's State Capitol Report, but Democratic State Senator Janet Bewley of Ashland has proposed a bill that would fine people $25 for smoking inside the confined space of a motor vehicle, a car, if children are exposed to the smoke. So making it illegal in Wisconsin to smoke inside your car if a child is also inside the car. Dan Kopanky, do you think that's we need that law?
I think it's a good practice not to smoke inside a car with children present, but I think this bill goes way too far and certainly wouldn't meet constitutional standards at all.
Oh, well, what do you think, Lon?
Well, here's a minority member, a really minority member of the state assembly, proposing a law to protect children from the bad and dangerous habits of their parents. This isn't even going to get a committee hearing, so, you know.
Well, maybe not. Wisconsin state lawmakers and the governor would be term limited under another long shot proposal being circulated by Republicans in the legislature. The constitutional amendment is sponsored by Representative Bob Gannon, a Republican from Slinger, and he wants term limits for Wisconsin lawmakers. Term limits for Wisconsin lawmakers, a good idea, Dan Kopanky?
Excellent idea. In my campaigns previously, I always advocated for term limits. I self-imposed a term limit on myself, 2 terms in the state Senate, I thought would be sufficient. I think it's a great tool to combat campaign finance issues because the person's only going to be there a certain number of years. I think it's great. I think we should have it in Wisconsin. I think we should have it nationally. There's too many people that have made careers out of being politicians, and there's so many good people out here that might take a stab at it if they didn't have to run against a 30-year incumbent with a pocket full of money.
Yep. So term limits, Lon Newman?
Well, I think it's a, gee, look at me, I care about good government kind of a sideshow that requires a constitutional amendment. And really, if we did care about good government, we could do something that has a proven relationship to better government, like fair redistricting, constitutional legislating, more open government instead of less, accountability and free and fair elections instead of less. I mean, those things actually worked. And, you know, I would like to ask for honest legislative oversight of the bureaucracy, which I think is now more partisan interference and obstructionism. So if you wanted to really have better government, I think we could do some things without a constitutional amendment. And in the areas that I just mentioned, we're going the opposite direction.
Here's a story we might also follow up on next week. We haven't done anything on the Kohler strike. A Sheboygan judge ruled Wednesday that an injunction barring picketers from interfering with traffic near the Kohler Company property will remain in place. The injunction bars demonstrators from interfering with traffic on public roads and with vehicles entering or leaving the company's property. Union leaders are seeking to eliminate a 2-tiered wage structure that they feel has created significant pay disparities among employees performing similar work at the Kohler Company. We have a very short time here, but not so much on the ruling of Lon Newman, but your thoughts on the Kohler Company strike.
Well, I think, you know, I'm old from the old P-9ers meatpacking strike in my hometown, which destroyed the meatpacking union and was, I think, during the Reagan era. It was really horrible. I think in this case, the courts are protecting the workers, strikers, employer, the public from dangerous, provocative actions and, you know, their right to do that. And then maybe they could move on to the Donald Trump rallies and provide the same kind of protection.
Any thoughts on the strike, Dan Kopanky?
Well, I hope it's resolved because it seems like Kohler has said that this is the most expensive plant they have in the United States and throughout the world, and so there should be some compromise here to retain these jobs. I think a 2-tier system, I don't get understand totally if that's just for new hirees or whatever until they get up to speed on their tasks. But it seems to make a little sense, and it seems to me that through a period of time that that system, they could be elevated and get to the regular wages. So there's got to be a compromise here. This company's too important to Wisconsin to lose a presence here in that area and also lose those jobs.
And we'll leave it
agreed.
There. Yeah, thank you both very much for being
thank
with
you.
Us.
Thank you.
Yep.
Dan Kopanky, former Republican state senator from La Crosse, owner of the La Crosse Loggers baseball team, and Lon Newman, a retired executive director of Family Planning Health Services in Wausau, former chair of the Portage County Democratic Party. Thanks to Bill Martins, to Christy Taylor, and to Elizabeth Deliquest for producing and directing this program. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.